This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to WTIC's Pet Talk. Today, Lori Fast takes your pet behavior questions. This is a show for you and your best friend. Call in now at 522-WTIC, 1-800-966-WTIC, or star WTIC from your cell phone if you have AT&T Wireless. And now, Pet Talk.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Pet Talk. You're listening to Lori Fast on this behavior edition of the show. Most of the time when you're listening to me on the air, I'm here live. One week I called our producer, Kevin, and told him that I had a friend who had a dog who needed to go be looked at the vet for some emergency stuff. And she wanted a second set of ears and some moral support. And so it was a recorded show that particular day. But generally, I'm here live, which means that you can call in. And just for reference purposes, it's August 3rd on this hot, balmy day. And so if you would like to call in, I'd love to hear from you. And I always encourage people to call in early at 860-522-WTIC, which is 860-522-9842. And I always invite people to contact me off the air. And the easiest way to access my email and phone number off the air is to just check my website, which is LoriFassDogTraining.com. And I also leave my off-the-air phone number with Kevin. So if for some reason you don't have internet access and you just want my phone number, you can call and Kevin will give it to you. I always write it down for him so he knows, because I don't think he has that number memorized. But anyway, I have some topics I'd like to go over today. But as I was coming into the studio, I crossed paths with John Matulis and we had a little talk about some of the dog bite situations and liability and that kind of thing. And it just brought to mind some of my own experiences. So since I kind of went down that road, I wanted to share it with you guys. So from my point of view, or at least my experience, I'm going to say my point of view, I get frequently contacted by people who have dogs who are out of control and they want to get their dogs under control. And I have been also contacted in legal matters where dogs have done something or in some cases been accused of doing something. And in one really bad case that was many years ago, accused of something that they did not even do. And so, you know, some of the stuff gets pretty complicated, you know. So, for instance, I was hired by somebody who wanted to get homeowners insurance, and they had a dog. Their dog was probably maybe between 50 and 60 pounds, a mixed breed dog. I don't know exactly what, sort of short-haired, you know, could have been any number of different things. And might have even had some pit bull. Who knows? I mean, that's so common that flip a coin, it probably has some pit bull. And her homeowner's insurance basically told her that they would give her homeowner's insurance if she allowed somebody from the insurance company to come out and meet the dog and okay the dog. So the reason that I met her is she wanted to do some lessons to get this dog to behave itself when it met somebody new. And that's a good idea anyway. But in this particular instance, it was going to be whether or not she was going to be allowed to have homeowners insurance or not. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, because I asked her, you know, how did this occur? I mean, when they came out to meet the dog and the dog was loose in her house and the guy just walked in and, you know, she followed some of the instructions that I gave for getting the dog to have better greeting behavior. And apparently everything went fine. But I'm thinking, what kind of a job is that? I mean, if I'm hired by somebody who has a dog whose greeting behavior is not appropriate, I will tell them to put their dog away for the first part of the lesson, and then we're going to talk about how you're going to control the behavior. And when you have a good idea of how you're going to do that, I go out and then I come in again. And then now you know what to do when your dog starts to do these things. But if I'm going to, you know, see if this dog is going to maybe bite somebody, I don't want to just walk into somebody and say, oh, well, you know what? Your dog just took a chunk out of my leg. I guess we're not going to give you insurance after all. I mean, that seems kind of reckless to me. I mean, I don't know what kind of a test that is. That seems a little weird to me. But, you know, I would like to have talked to that insurance person to find out what their experience is. But presumably, you know, people would have at least enough sense to not invite somebody into their house, particularly from an insurance company, if they thought their dog was actually going to take a chunk out of somebody. And then on another occasion, I was hired by somebody who had a German Shepherd, and the dog had apparently bitten some people. And not, yeah, I mean, enough that they needed to go and, you know, have it cleaned up and maybe a couple stitches, but nothing like some horrible mauling or something like that. I mean, not that what I'm describing is okay either, but, you know, it wasn't good. And this particular pet owner got my name from their insurance company. And I thought, well, that's weird. I wonder why they did that. And then come to find out, there are insurance companies that will give you homeowners insurance if your dog has a canine good citizenship title. And I'm a canine good citizenship evaluator, and I'm listed on the AKC website. And I guess just geographically, I was very close to this woman. And so I thought, well, that's interesting. I didn't know that until I got this call from the woman who was insured by the who was trying to keep her homeowner's insurance. So even though her dog did these things, her insurance company was willing to continue with the homeowner's insurance if she got the dog certified as a canine good citizen. Now, what ended up happening in her case is that her dog was kind of out of control. And, you know, this wasn't going to be something that I could just stop by and just say, oh, do this and do that, which sometimes I can. And that's always fun for everybody. Make it easy peasy. But this was a dog who really needed some training. And so I think we were maybe in lesson two or three, something like that. And, you know, I don't think this dog necessarily needed, you know, like 20 lessons, but it was going to need more than two. And, as we were progressing along, apparently somebody that this dog had bitten before came forward and then wanted, was starting to sue her. And so because of that, her insurance company, it was like one too many strikes against her. And just so you know, if your dog bites somebody, there's a 2-year statute of limitations. So that means, you know, if your dog bit somebody, well, I don't know, we're in August of 2024. So if your dog bit somebody in September of 2022, they can still sue you. So, you know, that's kind of alarming information, but that's what happened in this particular case. And so she ended up rehoming the dog, and she had a number of personal challenges in her life. She was going to have to move. She had been recently divorced. So I think that, you know, if your own life is in a state of chaos, it's often very difficult to control your dog. I mean, whatever your lifestyle is, whatever is going on in your life, it does reflect in your ability to handle, manage, and control your dog. But anyway, I wasn't going to talk about any of that until I listened to John Matulis today. But what we're going to do is we're going to go to a break, and we will be right back.
I want a dog.
Hello, and welcome back to WTIC's Pet Talk. You're listening to the Behavior Edition today with Lori Fass, and I'm here live in the studio on this hot August 3rd. And so if you'd like to call in, that would be great. And the numbers are 860-522-WTIC. Or that translates to 860-522-9842. And as always, if you want to contact me off the air, you're more than welcome to. And a lot of people have taken me up on that. And the easiest way to track me down is to check my website, which is LoriFassDogTraining.com. Anyway, I recently read an article that I thought was... I don't know how I could describe it other than kind of a little bit shocking. I think most people, you know, understand the idea of why it might be a good idea to rescue or adopt a dog that is in need versus, say, going to a pet store. And pet store dogs, regardless of what the pet stores are telling you, because they understand what they're supposed to say, they're trying to make a sale, they get their dogs from puppy mills. Now, a puppy mill is basically, by definition, a place that's breeding dogs, usually a lot of dogs, and the purpose of their breeding is for them to make money. So a breeder who is breeding their dogs because they love them and they want the best for them, that's not the same thing as a puppy mill. So just because somebody is breeding a particular type of dog, that doesn't make them bad. And just because you're getting a dog from a rescue, well, guess what? That doesn't necessarily always make it good either. So I want to describe to you what I read because I thought it was very weird and strange and, like I say, a little bit shocking. Okay. So there are, if you want to check into what air quote breeders are really not too good, you can go on the Humane Society of the United States, not our local Humane Society, and look at their list, what they call the Horrible 100, which is a list of puppy mills that have been looked into as, you know, not being too great. Okay. And a lot of these places will represent themselves as their breeders. They're, you know, USDA inspected, blah, blah, blah. You can also go on the ASPCA website and look at their No Pet Store Puppies, which will give a similar kind of a list. Okay. So these puppy mill places, at least once a year, maybe more than that, I'm not sure how often they do this, will have auctions. And generally speaking, in the past, when I've heard about these auctions, people that do rescue would go to the auctions and buy for very little money dogs that no longer can be bred, dogs that are, you know, have physical problems that the puppy mill places just don't want to, they don't want to take care of them anymore. And so they kind of reach the end of the line. So if the rescue places didn't adopt them, then that would be it for them. So, you know, that I could see that. That sounds like a noble task. Well, apparently getting puppies from auctions has gotten really out of hand in the following way. Okay. A lot of rescues get money from fundraising events, and they are listed as nonprofit organizations. So, you know, they can get quite a lot of money with no having to pay taxes on it. And so a lot of these rescue places have been going to these auctions and not just buying or taking the dogs that are in bad condition, but taking dogs, any dog. Okay. So, oh, you know, here's a Cocker Spaniel puppy. Here's a, you know, a Doberman puppy. And the average price that they're paying for these dogs is about, according to this article, $465. But where it gets really interesting is there was one particular Cavalier King Charles Spaniel puppy that the rescue paid $5,000 for, which is completely ridiculous. I don't even understand what's going on here. Now, one of the reasons why people discourage you from getting a dog from a puppy mill situation is because you're funneling money into people who are treating these dogs poorly and exploiting them just for making money purposes. So now if you're a rescue and you're going to this auction and you're paying, you know, $400 or $500 for a dog, you're paying thousands of dollars for a dog, aren't you doing exactly that? Aren't you funding these very places that you don't want to see be doing this? So it seems a little bit like twisted thinking to me. Now, the pawns and are, of course, the dogs. You know, a dog from a puppy mill or a backyard breeder or that was picked off the street, it's an innocent being. It doesn't have any play in any of this kind of silly nonsense. But so not only is this happening, but taking it one step further, according, again, to this article, some of the puppy mills, when they know an auction is going to be coming up, they will specifically breed their dogs that they know that the rescues are going to want so that when they are at the auctions, they have like a litter of Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, or they have, you know, whatever the rescue places might be looking for. So now not only are we funneling money into them, now we're, you know, you're encouraging these people to breed even more dogs, which is just, I'm not sure what's going on here. Like, what are you doing? You know, I mean, it obviously any individual animal has a right to be loved and cared for. But if you think that people are doing things that are unethical, why are you participating in this? Now, years ago, the author, Patricia Cornwell, who loves bulldogs, was going into New York City pet stores, and she would buy any bulldog, if it was a French bulldog, if it was an American bulldog, you know, if it was an English bulldog, whatever the case may be, any of the bulldogs, she'd go in there and buy because she didn't want to see them in pet stores. And she thought she was rescuing them. And she used to work with New England Bulldog Rescue, and she would buy all these dogs and then give them to New England Bulldog Rescue. And New England Bulldog Rescue had to say, you know, we know you mean well, but you're going to have to stop. This is not good. So what these rescue places are doing is pretty much the same thing. And, you know, it's just so weird the way things get kind of distorted and, you know, something that's well-meaning gets really twisted and out of hand in a kind of shocking way. But I want to, after the break, kind of talk about the difference between a good breeder and a bad breeder and a good rescue and a bad rescue. And there are good and bad rescues. So, you know, before you start pointing fingers at, you're a breeder, you're bad, or the breeders many times get annoyed with the rescue group, sometimes for good reason. But it's deeper than that, and there's other things that you want to take into consideration. So we're going to go to a break, and we'll talk more about it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Pet Talk on WTIC. You're listening to Lori Fass on this behavior edition of the show. And if you'd like to call in with a question or a comment or just to say hi, I guess that's okay too. You can do so at 860-522-WTIC, which is the same thing as 860-522-9842. And as always, if you want to contact me off the air, just check my website, LoriFassDogTraining.com. So before the break, I was talking about how puppy mills have auctions and how some of the rescues are raising huge amounts of money going to the auctions, and that the puppy mills are now breeding to sell at very inflated rates, the dogs that they're breeding, to the rescue people, which kind of defeats the whole point of the whole situation. And I was going to tell you that there are things that you need to look for when you're picking out a dog, or things that you want to be careful of, or things that good breeders and rescues have in common. And I made a point-by-point list. I'm going to go through some of these. So the first criteria is, if you're going to a rescue or you're going to a breeder, they should care. I mean, that sounds kind of generic, but if they care, they're going to want to know who you are, and are you going to be a good home or not? Some people find that annoying, and you know, I have to say that in some cases, some breeders and rescues get a little bit out of control with this, a little bit crazy. But if they don't care, if they don't care where their dog is going, then obviously they don't care, you know, about taking care of their dog properly until they are placed. They don't care about, you know, housing the dog in a comfortable fashion. So if they don't care who's taking their dog, then that's a big red flag right there. So that's definitely going to be criteria number one. So in the meantime, let's talk to Susan. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. I didn't expect to get on so quickly.
Oh, are you eating something?
I was. I stopped.
That's okay. I hear you trying to eat it real fast.
I was trying.
Okay. That's okay. So what did you want to talk about today?
Okay, I have a Labrador Retriever. Mm-hmm. And Franklin is 8, and he loves to play fetch.
Okay.
At my house. But we've been mostly living at my boyfriend's house.
Okay.
And Franklin will not play fetch. Now, Paul used to have a dog, a lab, who's passed, who loved fetch.
Okay.
So I thought, oh, he doesn't want to interfere, but that dog's gone. I still can't get him to play fetch.
Well, are you talking about outside?
Outside, yeah.
Okay. And what you're trying to use to get him to play fetch, is it a ball or a frisbee or what is it?
He's a ball.
Okay.
He loves
all right. Well,
balls.
Will he play fetch at your boyfriend's house inside?
We've never tried that.
Well, okay. Why don't you try that? And then the next thing is, how far away are you throwing the ball?
Yeah, 6 feet, 20 feet.
Okay, so he won't retrieve it from 6 feet?
It'll come right to him. He'll catch it in his mouth, and then he'll go like, and spit it out.
Okay, so like, let's say he's standing next to you and you toss it like 4 or 5 feet away. He won't go look for it?
He will not.
Okay. But if you were at your house and you did it, he'd go get it.
Oh, heavens, yes.
Okay. All right. Now, what is his, when he's out in the backyard at your boyfriend's house, does he run around and explore, and is he comfortable just hanging out in the backyard at your boyfriend's house?
Generally, yes.
Generally?
Yeah,
that sounds like there's some exceptions here.
Yeah, he tends to come out, but he's never a dog that really likes to spend a lot of time outdoors.
Okay. Well, I guess what I'm getting at, what I'm trying to ascertain is he uncomfortable with the environment out there? If he's eight, maybe his eyesight isn't quite as good as it used to be, and he's not used to, you know, the surface there, or, you know, just the logistics of it. It looks different to him. It looks funny to him in some way. I mean, I'm guessing here, but that's why I'm trying to figure out, you know, how comfortable he is. And he doesn't have to be like scared to death, but he just might not be as comfortable in that environment. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you...
I think he feels like it's not his house, and it's like, I can't do that here. It's not my house.
Well, how recently has he moved to this new environment, or have you tried this?
We've been going there for about 4 years.
Oh, wow. Okay. This is a long time. Yeah. Okay. Well, does he like to play tug?
The other dogs, you know, there are other dogs there, by the way. I don't know if I mentioned that.
Makes a big difference. So at your house, there aren't other dogs.
Right. There's just him.
Okay. So what would happen if you tried to play, what would happen if you tried to play fetch with him and you had the other dogs inside?
I don't know. I've never tried that.
Well, I would try that because if I have, I have two dogs right now, okay? But occasionally, you know, dogs will come and visit and this sort of thing. And one of my dogs loves to play Frisbee. And if I'm playing Frisbee with him and the other dogs, when they see a dog moving, they're going to run. They're going to chase the dog that's, you know, running.
Running, right.
Okay. So if he doesn't like it when he's trying to play ball and the other dogs are chasing after him, then that would be enough reason right there why he wouldn't do it.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
See, we need all the facts here. We got to get all the facts. But I think that what I would do, rather than, you know, making it too complicated, because, you know, if it was a different situation, there might be a different answer. Why don't you see what happens if you try, you know, just keep the other dogs in for 10 minutes. I mean, in the summer, you're not, that's 10 minutes is too long. You know, catching the ball maybe 10 times. He's 8 years old in this kind of weather. That's plenty. But just keep the other dogs in and try it that way, and then let me know how that works out.
Yeah, I think that's. I think that might work.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan, huh?
I like that. Thank you.
Okay, all right. Now you can go back and have some more food.
Yes, I can finish my lunch. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Take care.
You too. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Okay, so let's see what Ellie has to say.
Oh, hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
I have a comment on the puppy mills.
Okay.
The problem with puppy mills is that the law is not enforcing. If it's a law on the books, they're certainly not enforcing it. I always thought it should be federal because they go from one state to another or one town to another.
Well, the big puppy mills are mostly out in the Midwest, although, you know, they're kind of scattered about, but they are required to meet USDA require. You know, they have certain requirements. But the fact of the matter is, those requirements, even if they are abiding by them, are very, very minimal. You can have a dog in a cage of a certain size. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. They can live there all the time. And
yeah, right.
That's
exactly.
Okay. That's still legal. Okay. You can have a dog that has almost no interaction with humans whatsoever. That's also legal. So there's a lot of things that, you know, are technically
legal. That's my point. Because why is that legal? Why do they have to be in one cage for 24/7?
Well,
I didn't get it. Well, she was a puppy mill dog, but she was a breeding dog. And before I got her, that was 5 years ago almost now, she never got into a house. She was living in a crate down in North Carolina.
Yep.
Okay. So I mean, it is the law. It, they're not. Then maybe they have to do away with the cages. They know you cannot have any more cages, or the cages have to be bigger than what you have now.
Well, it gets tricky on a lot of different levels. First of all, you know, I mean, I like to use crates for training, and if a dog is in there for a reasonable amount of time.
Oh,
then,
yeah,
then
I had I created when they're puppy or whatever, I created two. But I'm going through this now for the last more than 50 years. And I say, why? And the legislators, they don't do anything because
there's layers of this. Okay, so first we have legislation, and sometimes people pass certain types of legislation that's meant to have a good cause to it and ends up, you know, having a bad unintentional consequence. So there's that. But then there's also who is going to do these inspections. Do they, I mean, I remember reading, and I couldn't quote you exactly, you know, what the number of inspectors, USDA inspectors are compared to how many puppy mills there are. But I will say this, they were not enough. They were simply not enough. So if even if you were going to try and enforce the laws that exist now, which I think are lacking, but at least there's something, okay? But let's say that you were going to really enforce those, and if you did really enforce those, at least it would come out better for, you know, the dogs that, to some degree, you have to have the manpower to do it.
I know. Well, then you blame. Well, the rescues are blamed because they buy the dogs. But I know somebody who bought a dog from a pet shop, and because the dog was abused in the pet shop, that's why he took it out.
Yeah,
he paid over $1,000. That was quite some time ago, but over $1,000 for the dog. So I can't see why the rescuers do this.
Well, I mean,
it's just not good enough.
You know, yeah, I mean, it is very hard to come up with a really good law that's going to cover all your bases and then have the manpower to make sure these laws are put in place. So theoretically, yeah, that's a great idea, but we're, you know, you would have to have, you know, people being hired to do these things, and it's just not there. And how would you change that?
I used to do some volunteer work up at the in a horse farm, and there was one case where the inspector came because somebody said there was a dead pony up there, but it was dead, but it wasn't there for days.
Well, this just goes on and on.
We had one inspector coming up, and I said, you know, here you are. You're complaining about our place. I said, nobody is being abused up here.
Yeah, I know. It happens, you know, where people screaming abuse when it's not, and not going after abuse when it is. But Ellie, yeah. I am being told that I have to go to a break, but I appreciate your call, and it's a complicated situation, and I wish I had an answer. But
yeah, right.
Okay,
well, now
Ellie.
What I was going to throw, and he was very apologetic, and he said we only 3 inspectors for the whole state.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Okay, that answers your comment.
Right, exactly. Well, thanks for calling in, and, you know, I wish I had better answers, but that's the best.
Yeah,
I know.
Well, we just can't talk. I guess that's all.
Yeah.
And make the public aware of
yes.
it. So.
Okay, well, thank you for your call.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. For some reason or another, there we go. Okay, I was having a little trouble. Okay, we've got Joe on hold, but I think we need to go to a break. Okay, we'll be right back. WTIC's Pet Talk. You're listening to the Behavior Edition with Lori Fass. And I was talking about puppy mills, and I was talking about breeders, and a lot of the things, talking points about what constitutes a good rescue versus what constitutes a good breeder. Actually, there's quite a lot of overlap. I know I'm running out of time, and I'll probably go back over this maybe next time I'm on the air. But just to finish off the show, we're going to have a discussion with Joe. Hi, Joe.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. A few things. Another problem with pet stores, puppy mills, whatever you want to call them. As you know, breeds like German Shepherds, Golden Retrievers are prone to hip issues.
Mm-hmm.
A good breeder will either chew orthophos LSA or pen hip will have the hips evaluated on the parents.
Right.
And if they're bad, they won't breed.
Correct.
I don't think the puppy mills are screening the mother and father.
No, they don't care.
Can't say for sure.
So, they don't care at all.
You're gonna have a problem. That's another issue. Another thing too. The woman mentioned about playing fetch with her dog.
Yeah.
And you know, tying in with the hip issue. If you're gonna play fetch with your dog, and I don't probably do this already, even frisbee. Try not to have them jump to catch it, because the force placed on the hips and joints when they land, you could.
Well,
have
I didn't
issues.
Get the impression that her 8-year-old dog was jumping to catch the ball. I think
he's I'm just saying it's out there, you know, for anybody. I mean, either the dog's 3 years old. If you're going to play frisbee, sometimes he looks cute when they're jumping way up in the air and they land and everything. You might have an issue down the road.
Well, I mean, when I throw the frisbee for my dog, whose name is Arrow, he does hop up to grab it, but I'm not having him do acrobatics like he, you know, so you see some dogs that are like, especially Malinois, ever see them like jump off the back of somebody and do a flip off a wall and then they're catching something 8 feet up in the air? Ever see that stuff?
No, but I'm just saying, I think it'd be better if you have the hit the ground, have them pick it up that way.
Well, if you're talking about potential harm to a dog, I think that there's a lot of things that can harm a dog. And if you're playing fetch, the injuries that I've seen most likely happen is when dogs make quick turns. That tends to be something that blows out ACL, where they're turning and stopping and, you know, like going too fast. So if you're throwing the frisbee and it's on the ground and your dog skids to a stop or tries to turn because they didn't see that it was going to land lower and their perception was it was going to go farther, that can cause harm too, you know.
No, I understand that, but if you make a practice catching it when they jump up. Another thing too, before it's almost the end of the show, another thing they've been finding, if you're playing ball with your dog at the beach, frisbee, whatever it might be, when they're picking up the ball, if they're picking up sand, you could have issues there.
Yeah.
Swallow the sand. It's you know, I'm not making this up. You could have really serious
issues. I believe you. I'm just laughing. I'm imagining getting a mouthful of sand. I don't know how many people play ball or frisbee with their dog at the beach.
Well, I'm just saying out there. Listen, my dog, trust me. I mean, I walked over 3,700 miles with him last year. He's not just stuck in the house and everything, but there's certain little precautions you could take. You can't make it 100% safe.
Well,
I understand if
you're by the water, then you know, talking about safety concerns, don't swallow too much salt water.
I understand that. Don't
swallow too much chlorinated water. Yeah. So there's always things, you know, you want to be able to have fun with your dog without being paranoid, but...
Trust me. I mean, I average over 10 miles a day with my dog. Probably 40% is off-leash. But there's certain precautions. You can't make it. You can't put them in a bubble. I understand that. But I'm just saying, things like frisbee, if you're going to play it, fine. Try not to have them repeatedly jump up to get it. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think Arrow would be very disappointed in if he didn't get to jump up a little bit. You know, as I say, I don't have him doing all kinds of crazy acrobatics. But anyway, Joe, I got to go.
Right, have a good weekend. Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye. And that's it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.